Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
If you're looking for the best that European football has to offer, well, you've come to the right place. Welcome to On the Continent. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On today's Halftime in the Champions League quarterfinals show, on a snowy night in Munich, Noel, how the champs slipped up against PSG. Do we think it's all over? Also, the jury's in on Zidane after making it look easy against Liverpool. Is he the Real deal? And Juve finally turn up against Napoli? Are they back on track for the Serie A title? Well, if Nikki Bandini says they are, they are. So what's she going to say? What a week in the Champions League. What a week. The return of the Champions League. A lot to talk about, Andy and Nikki. Should we start by talking about one of the matches that perhaps isn't going to be seen as a classic, and maybe a lot of people would have missed it, which has a Portuguese interest. So do you want to go first, Andy?
You know what? The reaction in Portugal is one of... the performance was perfect apart from the mistakes that lost the game, which I think is kind of fair enough, really, because Porto played really well. I think a lot better than people expected they would be able to do against Chelsea. Chelsea maybe, as I was saying on the ramble earlier, a little bit fragile after what happened against West Brom at the weekend. But Porto have already proved a lot, I think, by getting past Juventus. And they proved something again, that they're not to be taken lightly, despite the fact, in budgetary terms, them being in a Champions League quarterfinal with Chelsea is something absolutely extraordinary. But of course, the most expensive thing in world football is finding that elite level striker at the end. I think that Porto performance, if you've got, say, a Cristiano Ronaldo or even an Andre Silva at the sharp end of it is completely different. But I mean, a lot of the Champions League chat we're going to have is about taking chances or not taking chances, because Nikki, it was a really, really fantastic week of quarterfinals.
Yeah. Oh God, there's too many connections pinging off in my head last week. I know you guys were talking about strikers last week and how important the absence of Robert Lewandowski would be. Well, pretty flipping important in a game where I think Alphonso Davies gave the tally of 31 chances for Bayern Munich. I'm not sure if that's an exact figure, but that's the one which they were giving. They had they had a lot of chances in that game and against Paris Saint-Germain, which was just the most bonkers, entertaining game of Champions League knockout football. It was so much fun. But another conversation that's just fizzing in my head right now, because we just were having it off air before we started. We had a random, quite off-topic conversation about Game of Thrones and joking about this idea of, but then you just throw dragons in at the end and that just decides everything. Well, sometimes you just throw Neymar in there and you throw Mbappe in there like they're the dragons and they just torch everything, don't they? And that's kind of a little bit what this tie was, or at least the first leg of this tie, was one team probably played better than the other overall, although neither of them seemed to put an awful lot of energy or effort into their defending, but one team had at least one pretty effective dragon to decide things.
Not only that, clearly from the weather, winter is coming.
It was, okay. I mean, the snow was really interesting to sort of touch on that quickly because you mentioned it. Like, I was watching that first goal back and it's so early in the game and the snow really was coming down a lot at that moment. And look, there's always this sort of thing when you try to draw parallels between your own experiences in very, very amateur sport and then professional sport. But everyone knows that feeling if you've done a little bit of sport of you stepped out and it's really cold and you're not quite ready. And Manuel Neuer does not let in goals like that often. And I do think the snow might have had something to do with it. I do think being that cold, being that impacted by the weather, even though you're a professional, even though you sort of set yourself the standards of not being, I think in that moment, it's just one tiny extra distraction in a game that can be decided so quickly by tiny distractions.
Yeah, talking of which, Andy, that first goal that Nikki talks about, Mbappe scored it. It did seem at that point, and we're talking about only 3 minutes in, but as much as you can make judgments about these things, it did seem as if the visitors, PSG, wanted it more.
I'm not sure about that, Dotton. I don't think it's really a case of desire necessarily. Although when we're talking about desire, I've never been so keen, much as I love your singing, for you not to massacre Sometimes It Snows in April by Prince, which I thought was on the menu. I've got to admit. But in Germany, in Süddeutsche Zeitung, for example, it's just been framed really as a lack of killer instinct. And I think that's absolutely right. I mean, it seems too simple almost when we're sitting here, Nikki and I, boiling it down to the absence of Lewandowski. It does make a huge difference. And we know, I think it's not just the absence of Lewandowski, but the late pull out of Serge Gnabry with coronavirus, because he was rested at Leipzig at the weekend. Huge game, because both of these teams had huge games to set them up for this. Bayern at Leipzig, Paris Saint-Germain against Lille, which they performed in very, very poorly. And they were keeping back Gnabry on the bench at the weekend and replacing him with Choupo-Moting, thinking we're going to unleash him on Paris Saint-Germain. I can't help but think that would have made a difference as well. I mean, if you look at Gnabry's record for a goal-scoring record, when he takes a more central role for the German national team, he does get to drift in field. It's fantastic. He's got a brilliant goal-scoring record for Germany. So that was another huge blow. Of course, PSG were without some of their main players as well. And I felt that Marco Verratti, his absence would maybe make as large a difference on this tie as the absence of Lewandowski, because he's been so important under Pochettino. He's been pushed up into that behind the striker spot, that sort of number 10 role, to make up for that lack of creativity they've got in midfield. But you know what? Neymar did that really well from the off. It's Neymar's spot as well. Neymar is arguably his best at number 10. So, you know, what you do long term, whether Verratti stays there, if Neymar stays fit, in terms of that position in the team, I think is a question. But going back to your original point, Dotton, I do think that without trimming Bayern's contribution to the game down, because I thought, apart from taking those chances, they were pretty good. Or not taking those chances, I should say. The fact is that PSG reminded us that you can be in a project for the money and still give everything. And that's something that I think people are sometimes not ready to accept. You know, you're either got your heart in it or you're a mercenary. I kind of think you can be both. And, you know, this set of expensively assembled players and this slightly uneven squad, I mean, again, I don't want to go too simplistically by saying they defended for their lives, they had an incredible goalkeeper, and they made the most of Bayern's high line. But a lot of that is probably 75% of the story of the game. But how much they gave, I mean, Pochettino talked about that at length afterwards, and that is something that reflects very well on him, just as it reflects very well on the players.
How did you enjoy the game, Nikki?
I loved it. I loved watching it. There was an article this morning in The Guardian, which is a great article, by the way, so I'm never here to say this in a mean way, but Jonathan Wilson wrote an article which was like, so that looked like a great game of European football, but, and I was like, no buts, this was just great fun, don't give me the buts, I don't want to hear it. It's a great article, do read it. No, it was a hugely fun game. I think there's so many interesting threads with this PSG team. I agree wholeheartedly with Andy. I think that just because it is a money-making operation in a grand sense doesn't mean that the individuals involved aren't still professionals who enjoy what they do and want to be successful at it. And I think that there's this sort of concept that Pochettino talked about quite a lot when he was at Tottenham, actually, this idea of universal energy and things sort of all coming together and leading in certain directions. And he talked at one point quite a lot at Tottenham about how the season Tottenham finished second to Leicester, he felt like they were fighting against not just Leicester, but this overwhelming communal will that Leicester should win because everyone wanted that story to come to fruition. And how does that then square with being in charge of this team who a lot of people in the world outside of Paris, where of course they have got that universal feeling, but elsewhere in the world, a lot of people look at it very cynically and go, oh, this is the worst form of modern football, being all about money and not being about passion. And maybe even Pochettino is the missing ingredient to bring that together, to make it about passion. He certainly has a brand of football that I think suits that team really well, because his football has always been about spreading the pitch out and making the space and using positioning and quick interchange to create and then take advantage of those spaces. And when you have Neymar and Mbappe, who can both go half the pitch in the blink of an eye, your ability to do that, to make those spaces, is so enhanced. And watching it in this game, and it is only one game, and look, they could have lost this game and they could well lose the second leg. It did feel like that moment of, oh, actually, I see how this comes together in a really thrilling way, actually, a really, really exciting way between the Pochettino vision and the kinds of players he has at his disposal now.
And the only meaningful way it can come together, Nicky, is in the Champions League, isn't it? Because, of course, football's about trophies and they'll be disappointed if they don't win Ligue 1 this season. But that match against Lille is not going to be talked about again in the near future, despite the fact they were dire, despite the fact they didn't step up in a game that could have a huge say in the destiny of the Ligue 1 title, because it is all about this. And I think the range of performances you've got from Pochettino PSG already in the Champions League, he's only been there 5 minutes. We've had that 4-1 win away at Barcelona. We talked about the grit and the doggedness, and that really was the take home for French media and French observers from the second leg against Barcelona, where they could have quite easily at least got into extra time there. I think because Barcelona was so good, particularly for the first hour, they almost sort of sidestepped the grisliness of the first half. French observers against Barcelona in that second leg and thought, well, you know, they did get stuck in that second half. Of course, Keylor Navas was praised to the hilt, just as he was after last night, which is quite right. And I think, you know, when we have discussions about the best goalkeeper in the world, he never seems to be in it, which is kind of ridiculous, really, because he steps up at moments like this. He's a multiple Champions League winner. And, you know, he could be again this season. Who knows? But what I think is amazing about this tie as a whole, and we've been treated to a lot of great football this week, is that even when they always have this little box in L'Equipe the morning after a Champions League game, when they've got the match report, and it'll say, since the European Cup started in 1957, this is the percentage of teams that have won after getting this first leg result. And I think it has, what, 97% of teams who won the first leg 3-2 away have won the tie. And I remember reading that this morning and thinking, this is pointless. I don't know. I really don't know why you've put this on the page, because whatever's happened in the past has no correlation to this situation. And I've never seen a team lose a Champions League game 3-2 at home and they risk losing it more. I mean, there was some chat on the English commentary of when they're 3-2 down. Is there a point when they decide, well, actually, we can come back from 3-2 away from home. We could go to Paris and win 2-0, 3-0. It's possible. But is there a point where they think we're going to risk avoiding extra damage? That never even crossed Bayern's minds. And in fact, the reason that PSG end up winning the game, the opportunity for Neymar to, for Mbappe to break away and score that brilliant third goal is kind of created by Bayern going, we're not settling for 2-2. You know, even if that gives us a better chance in the second, it's never in the back of their minds that what would be the most sensible option there. And I think for a European football behemoth to think like that, it's amazing.
Well, but there's another sort of parallel there that's just interesting, which is, if you remember, that was what once was Sir Alex Ferguson's idea of how to win in Europe, was to just outscore the opposition, just do more. And at some point he had to wind it back, and that's when he was successful. Having said that, Bayern won doing this last season, so it's not like they have any doubts about the idea that this can work. And I think, as we've already said, I think if they have Lewandowski, if they have their dragon, we'd probably have a different outcome.
So, since the European Cup was created in 1957, as it says in L'Equipe today, with the right accent, do you not agree then? Do you not? I shouldn't have done that, I know. Do you not agree with Nikki then, Andy, that Bayern might overturn the deficit in the second leg?
Oh, I think it's totally possible. That's why I'm not having the 97%. In the words of Han Solo going into the asteroid field, don't tell me the odds, because I think it's not important in this situation. Of course, there's the carrot of Lewandowski as well, because after he injured himself in the game against Andorra playing for Poland, he was out for a month. Well, Lewandowski being Lewandowski, he's like, right, no problem, I'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm penciling in my little springtime trip to Paris already. I mean, that would be a twist in a tie full of them. Wystartował Lewandowski, do niego piłka, nie ma spalonego, Lewandowski, okazja, gol! Gol! 1-0, ale to się zaczyna stycznie! 140 sekunda tego meczu i prowadzimy na kampę!
Let's talk about another cracking match in the Champions League this week. Real Madrid made it look easy against Liverpool. Fair enough, Nicky. Liverpool have got their problems domestically. They're not the Liverpool that were the champions last season, clearly. But to make it look that easy, is it time for us to start thinking about the power behind the engine room of Real Madrid, i.e. Zinedine Zidane, once upon a time the world's greatest footballer, but he hasn't managed to keep that kind of level of status up as a coach, has it?
Well, I almost don't see what there would be that much to knock his status as a coach. I think there was this perception when Zidane first walked in and goes and wins the Champions League right away that it's just always so easy to look at Real Madrid and go, well, anyone could do that. And I think that perhaps with my Italian focus on, I look at it and look at what's happening with Pirlo at Juventus, and I know we're going to talk about that later, so not to get into it, but I think, well, obviously not anyone can walk into these jobs and do them to the level of winning things. I think Zidane stepped into that role very confidently. He'd earned it in at least some sense by working with the second team first. But I think it's definitely a remarkable job that he's doing right now, not just in drawing the best of some players who I think a lot of people were writing off earlier in the season. I think there was a real sense of this is the end of Modric. This is the end of even like Sergio Ramos, like the end of this era of a certain Madrid. Drawing the best from them, but also finally getting the value that Madrid need to be getting out of a player like Vinicius at a time when there isn't going to be the opportunity perhaps to spend as freely in the near future as they have been used to doing in times of trouble.
Yeah, Vinicius was amazing in this match, Andy. And you can't write off Modric because he was a playmaker and had at least one assist. But the problem seems to be that, well, I don't know, in the past I've often sort of wondered whether great footballers, really, really, really top footballers make great coaches. There's a couple of examples where they do, but often enough, more than likely, we're faced with also-rans in the managerial stakes when it comes to great footballers. Wayne Rooney might be finding that out at the moment, for example. But with Zidane, there was an extra level, I think, of superhero about him as a footballer. And he goes to Real Madrid and you think, well, he's got to be able to keep that sort of super level up. So even when his team walk all over Liverpool as they did this week, you're still like, that's Zidane, you know, not sure if he's what he's made out to be. What does he have to do then to convince people that he is the Real deal? And you saw what I did there.
I don't think he especially cares about that perception, to be honest, Dotton. If he does, he does it like he does everything else, very, very privately. And I think the reason that Zidane is not heralded as one of the greatest coaches is maybe threefold. I think, firstly, he's someone who, unlike 95% possibly more of other coaches, is not one to talk at length about his own philosophy, which people love to hear. And managers love to hear themselves say, I think, talking about their philosophy, their vision of the game. And he doesn't talk about that, just the same as he doesn't talk about anything else. And he never did while he was a player. You know, he's a very, very taciturn character. I think the other thing is the fact that it's at Real Madrid. Now, you talked about him coming to Real Madrid. As a coach, he was already there, I think, is probably the point. The fact that he kind of stepped up as the most glamorous caretaker ever initially, we reacquainted ourselves with the aura afterwards. But the fact that he's part of the furniture there through his years as a player, through his time working with Castilla, the B team, that's really important to the way that he was able to adapt and be that sort of steady influence. I think the third reason that people maybe put a little question mark over Zidane is because he doesn't feel like a builder of great teams. Firstly, because he's squeezing a little bit more out of a golden generation of Real Madrid players. And secondly, if he ends up with this fourth European Cup, I'm still not convinced that people look back and go, here's one of the greatest coaches, because of the manner in which they've won them. Now, I suspect that dissipates with time, because people look at the trophies rather than the detail when you're 10, 15, 20 years down the line. Because I think, say, if you look at I don't know, Bayern winning three times in the 70s. People now say that Bayern team that won three times in the 70s. They don't say that Bayern team that were quite lucky to beat Leeds in Paris. They don't say that Bayern team that were the beneficiary of the square goalposts at Hampden Park when they played St Etienne. Just like they won't say that Real Madrid team that were absolutely flamed at the Bernabeu and saved by a Cristiano Ronaldo penalty against Juventus in the Buffon moment there. That team, you know, that really were out on their feet against Atletico in 2016. And if Atletico had dared be a little bit more front foot, then that they would have gone on to win the game. And, you know, that is football, really, isn't it? You know, I think the detail fades as time goes on. But if we look at the detail of this, what he did against Liverpool is actually a contradiction to all of that, I think. Because, I mean, Liverpool weren't at their best. And I do think in other situations that Kroos, Modric, Casemiro midfield is under pressure against a fully ready Liverpool team that are more athletic than them, that don't give them space. As it was, they gave them all the space they wanted. But when we're talking about Zidane, not just as aura, not just as man manager, but as actual coach, the first thing he did brilliantly against Liverpool, he picked the right team. He picked exactly the right team to do what they needed to do. And you said it, in picking Vinicius, in sticking with Asensio, who'd had a good game at the weekend, playing a slightly different role against Eibar, who resisted the temptation to keep three at the back, even after they lost Varane with coronavirus, and resisted the temptation to have Marcelo as wing back, which he was wondering out loud in the pre-match press conference. Should I do that? I really love Marcelo. And he resisted that temptation to do that. That's the biggest reveal you will ever get from Zidane. So from the team he picked, to the way they went about it in the first half, to the way that Kroos dropped off and looked for Vinicius's run, and they sought to isolate Alexander-Arnold, to the way which they retook control in the second half after Liverpool came out quite strongly, I thought, in the first 10 or 15 minutes of that. He played it absolutely perfectly. He would never say this for himself, of course, but, I mean, that all spoke for him.
Yeah, I think it's a valid point about Liverpool not being at their best. And I did think the space and time that Kroos had to pick out some of those long passes over the top that were so effective with Vinicius running onto them certainly is something that you would think a better Liverpool, a sharper Liverpool would have closed down more effectively. I do think it's worth sort of also keeping into context, if you want to sort of talk about why people have been sceptical, they've had some really bad games this season as well. And I think that during the group stage, when they lost to Shakhtar Donetsk twice, it felt like such a different moment in the team's trajectory. It felt like such a different path that Real Madrid were on. And look, in the end, this is football. We do react to results. And when the facts change, the narrative changes. And the narrative right now looks a lot rosier than it did back then. But I do still always, just on this topic, come back to that first thought, which is, if winning the European Cup like isn't enough to validate you, what's going to validate you? There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do that's going to stop people from doubting you if winning the biggest trophy that you can win isn't going to do it.
Yeah, Nicky makes a point, actually, there that just struck me during the game. To a certain extent, Real Madrid were playing the long ball in terms of their goals. And you think, oh, God, not that old long ball, but it was effective. And obviously, Liverpool, a team of much younger players on the whole, weren't able to deal with it, as you said a moment or two ago, Andy. I wonder, though, whether Real Madrid's issue here is the changing of the guard. You know, whether Zinedine Zidane is going to turn out to be the French stroke Spanish equivalent of Alan Hansen and say, well, you don't win anything with kids, do you? If he's thinking out loud in a press conference. At some point, though, they're going to have to get rid of that midfield in particular, they're going to have to get rid of people like Sergio Ramos, as much as he's a legend. He's still got a lot in him. But to keep Real Madrid up to the level that you're expecting, they're going to have to do that. And I can't see how they're going to move on from what is essentially the backbone of their team all at once. It's going to be a gradual process. And I can't quite see that beginning to happen at Real Madrid. I think he might come unstuck, you know.
100%, Dotton. And I think the big criticism of Zidane in his first spell and in his second spell is those players. Really, Asensio and Vinicius should have been doing this every week for the past 2 years, but they haven't been. And as the coach, of course, they've got to take responsibility as individuals and as part of a collective, but he's not done that. And he's not been able to... Really, the only young players who he's really assimilated, Ferland Mendy, who's been brilliant since he's arrived from Lyon, and Federico Valverde, who he considered not fit enough to break the Holy Trinity in midfield for this. And, you know, he made the right call, I think. And Valverde has basically banged down his door with his performances. But if you think of some of the other young players like who they've bought and who haven't worked out, now, some of them you might feel are not really good enough for Real Madrid, but the money they've spent on Eder Militao, who's played well, I thought, on Tuesday, but has really had a minimal impact. You look at Odriozola. You look at Marcos Llorente, who they thought he would bring through to replace Casemiro and is now tearing up trees for Atletico Madrid across the city in a completely different situation. These are all at least micro failures of Zidane's management. But you're right that they've almost a night like this is putting off the inevitably even more. Because if you can turn around and say, well, you know what, Kroos, Modric and Casemiro can still do it together. So let's not break them up. Let's stick with them. Let's ride this wagon till the wheels fall off. And I think maybe the biggest favour that fate has done him this week is the injury to Sergio Ramos, who, as we know, is a huge story in Spain because he came on for the last 4 minutes of that game against Kosovo, got himself injured in the warm down, which plays really badly for him as he's pitching for a new contract, having just turned 35. But then he's there in the stadium looking the coolest guy in Valdebebas, but not actually at the heart of it. And, you know, they're saying now, you know, after they've associated previous failures with in the Champions League, particularly at home, with having no Sergio Ramos. Against Manchester City last year, they went out with no Sergio Ramos. When he got himself deliberately booked in Amsterdam at the end of that win against Ajax, and then they got absolutely hammered in the return while he was filming his documentary in one of the presidential boxes. All those play into the myth of we can't do it without Sergio Ramos. And maybe against Liverpool, they've slightly changed the narrative.
Del Piero, rete, rete, un gol ancora più bello rispetto a quello allo Zenit.
Perde un po' il tempo Doni per staccare, ma la palla è fantastica, calciata con il giustamente forte a girare tutta la barriera.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This week at Sukarnov.
Over on Clash of the Titles, the gang are counting down to the Oscars with a special month of Best Picture clashes.
Rocky won the Oscar that year. Do you guys think it was a deserving winner that year, or do you think something else should have won?
I think Taxi Driver should have won.
I am with you, Vicky. My heart says Rocky. Rocky's one of my favourite films of all time. I don't like watching Taxi Driver, but it is.
No.
It is.
That's true.
It is amazing.
And that's so true. No one's ever like, oh, do you want a Bosch Taxi Driver?
Or if that doesn't tickle your fancy, and why wouldn't it, check out the Book Club on Football Ramble Presents, where former footballer Ricky Hill discusses the highs and lows of his storied career.
My schoolmaster came in afterwards and said, oh, you know, you've been invited, three of you have been invited for trials up at Luton. And I initially my thoughts were, where is Luton? I had no idea. and I said, well, I'm not going.
All that and a whole lot more. Sukarnov.
Okay, Nikki, should we talk about the Italian Zinedine Zidane? Great player, went on to coach a great team. It's not quite working out for him. Andrea Pirlo, obviously. Although it does seem as if Juve are back with a win against Napoli. Are they really back?
I think that really would be reacting too much to one result. It was a really, really big result. It's not the big result that perhaps Juventus fans were hoping it would be, that it could have been if some previous results hadn't been so bad, where you could win this game and say, right, we're back in the title hunt, we're right in the thick of it. Because Juventus are still 12 points behind Inter at the top of Serie A. There are now 9 games left to go. One of those is against Inter. But even if Juventus win every game now until the end of the season, including that game against Inter, you're still relying on Inter to drop 9 points in their remaining 9 games. And Inter have won 10 in a row. So it's not feeling all that likely that even if you're perfect, you're going to cross that line. And frankly, Juventus is still a long way from perfect. This was a really good performance, one of their best performances in some time. And there's lots of fascinating things to pick out of that, not limited to the fact that the player who scored their second goal, and a brilliant goal and looked brilliant coming off the bench, was Paolo Dybala, who's missed a lot of this season and hasn't, when he has been present, always looked like he has the same role and prominence under Pirlo that he had under Maurizio Sarri, where, if you remember, just last season, Dybala was actually named as Serie A's MVP, so ahead of Ronaldo even. But I do think this team is facing up to, in a sense, a very similar problem to Madrid, because it's not quite as much old guard as at Madrid, although you have some of the old Madrid old guard imported in the form of Ronaldo. There is definitely now a moment that Juventus are going through where they're trying to transition to a younger team. They're trying to start something new. But most of all, because of Ronaldo, there's also Chiellini, there's also Bonucci, but he's still got a bit of time left. Especially because of Ronaldo, you are trying to work out, can we still make the most of this superstar while he's here? Can we still, I mean, really win that Champions League, which we've gone steadily backwards in, while we still have another year of this guy on contract? And that question does not come close to going away with a win over Napoli. The win over Napoli is huge for the league standings, not because of the league title, actually. If Napoli had won the game, they would have knocked Juventus out of the top four. Now, that really would have been monumentally bad for Juventus, because about a quarter of their turnover comes from the Champions League. But the win is good within proportion is what I'm trying to say. Like, it's a really good win, an important win, a good performance. But the bigger questions hanging over this club pretty much all remain.
I know the Ronaldo question's not going away, Nikki, but I did want to talk about Federico Chiesa, because another really good game from him, another really good game from him in a big game. And I put it out on Twitter during the game, actually, saying, look, hands up if you thought Chiesa was nice to have rather than essential when he signed for Juventus at the start of the season, because clearly he's proved himself a quality player over a few years at Fiorentina. I think maybe there's a bit of confirmation bias with what happened to Bernardeschi, an outstanding player for Fiorentina, but only ever really a bit part player for Juventus. I looked at Chiesa, and especially when I remember, like, in the first part of the season when they played a Champions League game at Dynamo Kiev, and he was played by Pirlo in a lineup with Dybala and with Ramsey as well. And it didn't really work because they're all really wanting to attack the same sort of space. But what amazed me about that is Chiesa kind of readjusted in that game and thought, right, okay, I've got to figure out a way to make this work. But there's no shine retiring about it. There's no, I'm a first year player at Juventus who needs to prove myself. He not only has the talent to grab big games, he has the guts to grab big games. And, you know, there's maybe an argument that he's turning into their key player, or he will turn into their key player going forward. Did you imagine him having this much impact in his first season? And is part of it conditioned by the fact that Juventus are not at their best, on the other hand?
I'm absolutely in that camp. They should be putting their hand up and saying, I thought this was a luxury signing. I felt like it was a signing that Juventus felt... bullied is the wrong word, but I can't think of a better one. Like, they felt pushed to make it sooner than they wanted to. I think, frankly, they wanted to bring Chiesa in another year down the line, but the player wanted to do it now and was not patient about it. And so Juventus thought, well, this is a player we want for the long term, so let's make it happen. I had higher expectations, honestly, just being totally honest about my own analysis. I thought Kulusevski was going to have a bigger impact this season. It's gone completely the opposite direction, where Kulusevski has been a bit of a disappointment, but Chiesa has been fantastic. And I think this actually comes to a really interesting discourse around Pirlo and who he is as a manager, because you touched on it just there. Some of his lineups are interesting. Tactically seem very imbalanced at times. I think he's got better in that area, but certainly early in the season, some of the team selections seemed borderline bonkers with the amount of attacking players you were trying to get into the team. But if you listen to how he talks about how he conceives football teams, Pirlo talks over and over again about not positions, but roles. He has roles that he sees players being in. And Chiesa, he sees in this role of being a line breaker, of being someone who will be direct and get on the ball and be incisive, basically. And I think that what this system has done, this idea of not positions, but roles, it has empowered players who are exactly as you just defined it, bolder in their personality. Players who feel willing to say, all right, then I'll do what I think is right, I think are hugely empowered in this system. And those are the ones who have done the best under Pirlo. And I think Chiesa is example number one. And another example who I think is lesser in terms of his talent, but who has, I think, certainly shone much more than people expected to, is Weston McKennie. And I think that Weston McKennie, I'm still not sure about him as a all-around footballer, about his discipline, about his ability to be... He's certainly a good footballer, but a really sort of top-level technical footballer. But I think he's this great... what Americans would call like a sandlot player, like a player who would just take charge in a situation that's a bit chaotic, yeah. that's in a situation that, right, I'm just going to go. And I think that Chiesa has been like a higher level version of that. I think he's actually technically exceptional. I think he's maturing and developing at a level beyond what I thought of him, not just for Juventus, but also the national team. And that's really exciting to me as an Italian wanting him to be successful. But I do think there's something really core in that nature of Pirlo's management style. And perhaps it's a reflection of him as a player as well, that he felt most comfortable, most able to produce his best under managers who said, look, you're Andrea Pirlo. Go do Andrea Pirlo on the pitch and things will work out.
Juve are going to end the season not winning the trophies they really want to win. So if you compare them to Napoli, who haven't had a bad season, Napoli, have they? If you compare them to Napoli, who would feel that this season was better, the Napoli or Juve, do you think?
Napoli have had a very disappointing season as well, to be honest with you. Juventus were expected to compete for the title and that title challenge has essentially evaporated. They were expected to get to at least the quarterfinals in the Champions League and the owners certainly want to win it and that didn't happen. Napoli, that the expectation is not as high, but certainly Napoli expect to be in the top four and they spend enough to be in the top four. I think they have the third highest wage bill in Serie A at the moment. So they should be in the top four and they aren't right now. They came into this game on a run of better form. They've been winning games again lately. And part of that comes down to having everyone available. There's been a lot of time this season when Dries Mertens has been out with a complicated ankle problem that seems to keep coming back. Victor Osimhen, who was the club's record signing in the summer, he has not played nearly as many games as everyone wanted him to. And you saw the impact of that against Juventus because he came off the bench and won a penalty. But there's bigger issues at Napoli. There's been an atmosphere which just seems to keep coming back around. Last season, under Carlo Ancelotti, there was the infamous mutiny when the owner, De Laurentiis, tried to send the team off to a punitive training camp and players said no. Then Gattuso comes in and seemingly rides the ship a little bit, but he got very frustrated in the winter about rumours of a replacement coming in for him and the club not supporting him and saying, no, this isn't happening. And now the club has been on a long press silence, which has gone for weeks and weeks and weeks, not giving press conferences. But the expectation is that Gattuso won't be there next season. So they've had their own underlying problems going back for really, it feels like almost 2 years now that haven't been resolved. Talent-wise, player for player, they should be ahead of, for instance, a team like Atalanta. They should be competing with those teams to be in the top four. Pure talent-wise, they should probably be ahead of Milan, but they haven't been, and they were getting back to that point. So losing this game in that hunt for the top four, which is going to go down to the wire, the title race isn't, but the top four race is really tight right now. It's certainly a setback to lose this one against Juventus.
So it's that time when we ask both of you to recommend a game of the week that we can enjoy this weekend. It's going to be a hard one to follow Bayern versus PSG as the game of the week. Andy, have you got one?
You know what? I've got more than one. There was too much fun last week. There's too much fun this week as well. Of course, everyone should be watching El Clasico on Saturday night. Real Madrid at home against Barcelona. And it is set up perfectly, both with Atletico losing David's game of the week last weekend at Sevilla, as he predicted they would. And so Barcelona won against Valladolid, closed the gap at the top to 1 point, Real Madrid just behind, both of them looking in very different ways, in very good nick. But I know you're going to be watching that already. So my game of the week is going to be, I want to see how Atletico recover They're going back to Seville. They're away at Betis on Sunday night, by which point they might not be top, depending on how the Clásico result goes. Betis have improved recently under Manuel Pellegrini, and two big, big absences for Atletico. No Luis Suarez, who was banned anyway, but has done himself a muscle injury. So he's going to be out for 3 weeks in training this week. And also Marcos Llorente, who, as I've said on here time and time again, has been Atletico's best player over the last 12 months. So if they're going to start digging it out, as their captain Koke keeps saying they're going to do, well, they're going to do it the hard way.
So, Andy's gone with Spain. What about you, Nikki?
Can I be like peak hipster this week? Can I give you something a bit silly?
Oh, yeah.
Because the real answer is the Clásico, right? Like, go watch the Clásico, obviously, but on a different time. And there's not like a... of course, you bring me on here every few weeks. I have to give you something Italian because no one else is doing it. So I have to come on here and give you something Italian. There isn't like a great top of the table clash this week. So I'm going to give you right at the other end of the table. I'm going to give you bottom of the table Crotone, who are playing against Spezia, two newly promoted teams. Crotone have been disastrously bad for most of this season, really bad. And a few weeks ago, they brought in this manager, Serse Cosmi, who is, if you watched football back in the early 2000s, you might remember him. He was the manager of Perugia in the era of Luciano Gauci, the era of signing Sadi Gaddafi and threatening to fire on, I can't remember his full name. I'm going blank on his full name, which is awful. The Korean player who scored against Italy at the World Cup. And he was the manager, and he was this ridiculous, always bulging out of these fitted suits, but wearing a baseball cap at the same time, manager who'd been pulled up from lower divisions out of nowhere to take this job, larger than life character, wrote a biography in which he talked about how in one of his previous jobs he used to show his team porn on the way to games as a way to get them motivated. He's this really out there character who disappeared for 20 years and now has suddenly resurfaced at Crotone, bottom of the league. They've brought him in. And since he's come back, and I was one of the people who poured scorn on this appointment, it seemed like a really odd appointment. Since he's come back, they've only won once, but they have played some of the most stupidly entertaining football in Serie A. They've had comebacks that fell apart with late goals against Lazio. Against Napoli, they were down 3-1, came back to 3-3, ended up losing 4-3. They have this Nigerian forward, Simi, who has scored 8 goals in his last 5 games, more than anyone else in Europe's top 5 leagues up to that point. He'd scored 7 before all season. And he's this huge, lanky, he's almost 2 metres tall. He's really tall, awkward-looking player who then just scores bicycle kicks out of nowhere and does ridiculous things. They're just so much fun to watch at the moment. And they're playing in Spezia, so it's a relegation battle. It's not the game of the week. The game of the week is the Clásico. Of course it is. But if you're looking for something to watch on Saturday at, I think it's 2 p.m. UK time, just for your relevant local time zone, that will be an entertaining game. I'm willing to bet on that one.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.